I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guests are Chef Sean Naputi and business partner Sean Camacho of Prubechu, San Francisco's premier Guamanian pop-up restaurant. They're joined in conversation by Angela Carrier, Director of Civic and Community Engagement at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Also, San Francisco State University Professor of Race and Resistance Studies, Carrie Ann Borja, gives an account of Guam's tumultuous and complex history. And now, join Thuy Tran on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces our guests.
Hello, everyone. My name is Thuy Tran. I'm the Associate Producer of Public Programs. My pronouns are she, her, they, them, and it is a pleasure to welcome you to tonight's remarkable program with Prubechu. Together, we'll explore what the tomorrow table means in today's shifting sociopolitical landscape. And as we come together for this delicious meal prepared by Chef Sean Naputi and his amazing Prubechu team, we ask that you reflect with your table mates on a few things. Guahan is the name given to Guam when the Chamorro people first settled on the island over 4,000 years ago. It means we have, as in we have a home, we have land, we have food. This island has everything we need to survive. But what does it mean when your island is violently captured and is no longer the home you once knew? When your ancient language is banned and dictionaries are destroyed and you're forced to become citizens of another country, the ramifications of colonization is pervasive and is still felt today by the Chamorro people. We'll learn about Guahan's decolonization movement and the ways the Chamorros are preserving their culture, language, and foodways. And of course, an immense thank you to the duo behind Prubechu, Chef Sean Naputi and Sean Camacho, the general manager. You'll be hearing from both Sean's later tonight, moderated by Angela Carrier. And we'll also, I'm going to bring up Carrie Ann Borja to talk about her work with Guahan's decolonization movement. Carrie Ann Ifit is the Borja Familian Caderon San Daso Tautau Guahan. She is an indigenous Chamorro woman, educator, community organizer, and activist, photographer, and carver traditional Chamorro body ornamentation. Carrie Ann currently resides in Oakland, teaching ethnic studies at Visiticon Valley Middle and a professor of Pacific Studies at SFSU. She has spoken in various spaces about the beauty and struggles of her people and island, the indigenous Chamorros of Guahan. Carrie Ann has testified at the United Nations twice and continues to fight and be actively involved in Guahan's decolonization movement as co-chair of the OD Committee in Independent Guahan Bay Area Chapter. Can we please give it up for Carrie Ann?
Half a day. So I was asked to come through to speak a little bit about who are we, right? Who are Chamorros? Where is Guahan? And a little bit about the political history, right, in terms of the current situation currently happening back home. So it was mentioned earlier, right, Guahan is located in Oceania. If you want to use Micronesia, Polynesia, Melanesia, it is located in Micronesia. Guahan is the southernmost island of the Marianas Islands, which is the home of the indigenous Chamorro people. So we are not only from Guahan, we are also from Luta, Tinian, Saipan, and all of the islands there. As mentioned, we're over 3,500 years old. We are the creators of the lati, the creators of the fastest canoe, the flying proa. And just to kind of give a little bit of background, right? Usually when I meet folks and I tell folks, like, I'm from Guam, they're like, oh, I know someone who's from Guam. And usually my first question always is, are they Chamorro or are they Guamanian? Right? And a little bit about the differences, right? Chamorros, we are the indigenous people of the land. Guamanian is a nationality, right? Chamorro ethnicity, Guamanian nationality. So if ethnically you are Filipino, if ethnically you are Chicana, right, but you're born and raised in Guahan or Luta or Tinian and Saipan, right, or actually, no, for just Guahan, right, then you're Guamanian, right? And it's important to recognize this because there's a lot of political history that comes with that, right? So our political history in terms of Guahan, right, we have been around for over 3,500 years, right? We've started colonization with the coming of Magellan, who came to our island, and it was our people who saved him, unfortunately. And so with that started colonization in Guahan. Guahan being the longest colonized island nation in all of Oceania, right? We're coming on about almost five, no, with the U.S. is almost 500 years. But in 1521, Magellan comes through. That starts our colonization. And then after, with the signing of the Treaty of Paris and the Spanish-American War, of course, Guam becomes spoils of war, right? So the signing of Treaty of Paris ultimately puts us under the U.S., right? And this happens in 1898. And so from that time, the U.S. comes, they take over land, they basically come through, start to set up, and then World War II happens, right? Which then brings on our third colonizer, which is the Japanese. And this happens in 1941. And so they come through, they occupy the island for about three more years. And then July 21st, 1944 is when the U.S. comes back to Guahan, ultimately to quote unquote liberate the island. But when you liberate a place, you don't stay. You go in, you do what you need to do, and then you leave. The U.S. never did that. They came through, they got the Japanese out, and they stayed. And they continue to occupy the land until this day. And so since that time, they have totally changed from the Spanish to the Japanese to the U.S. Our culture, our language, our ways of life have changed over time because of the influence, yeah? When we look at the effects of colonization, the U.S. has had one of the biggest impacts on our people, right? So the military, for example, currently they occupy one-third of our island. At one point, they occupied two-thirds of our land. Our language banned in the schools until the 1970s. And it wasn't until the 1970s did we actually have our first elected governor, which was Carlos Camacho. Prior to that, it was always elected by the military. It was always some type of naval governor that was in place. And so in 1970 is actually when we get our first governor, up until today, where we actually have our first woman governor, Amagahaga, Lulian Guerrero, which is an amazing thing considering that we are matrilineal. Yes, give it up, right? Chamorros are matrilineal. We are matriarch society. So to have our first woman governor is an amazing feat. And I think it speaks to the current context that's currently going on back home in Guahan. As was mentioned earlier, there is this Chamorro Renaissance that is kind of going on back home. You have so many different groups and people who, you know, understand and know the importance of our language, of our culture, and who we are, the importance of the land, of the ocean, and what that means for future generations. And so you have different places such as Sagankutoran Temoro, which is a Chamorro cultural center whose purpose is to promote, perpetuate the Chamorro language and culture. You have Horao, which is one of the first Chamorro immersion programs back home that teaches not only the babies and the nannies, but also elders, right? And also the adults, right, who want to learn how to speak Chamorro. You have TV shows such as Nihi that promote, again, another way. Think of Sesame Street, but Chamorro, right? And it's all based on, like, what is important to us, like the different fishes in the ocean. And then you have on the other side of it, right, you have us, activists, right, if you want to call us that, or organizers who are continuing this fight against colonization that has been going on since the Spanish time when our ancestors fought against the Spanish to fight against colonialism and colonization. And it's been continuing, and so we're just kind of continuing on that legacy from our ancestors back then to OPIR, to Nation Chamorro, to now Independent Guahan, which is an organization that I'm blessed and happy to be a part of. But it's not just us, right? There's also Putai Latadzen, right? And Latadzen is this village up north. People know it as Rutidian. But it is a beautiful place where you can find all of the different eras and periods of our people and our culture in this one place. It's very sacred. You find Lati stones and artifacts and ancestral remains. And this place right now is currently going to be used or going to be blocked off because right above it is Anderson Air Force Base, which is now going to be used and creating a firing range. Because currently right now the situation back home is that there is a massive U.S. military buildup where they are taking Marines from Okinawa and bringing them over to Guam. And this is something that we've been fighting for a long time. Initially, back in 2009, it was going to be 8,000 Marines. Now it's down to 4,000 Marines. And so there's people who have been fighting against this. And essentially, what we believe, Independent Guam, Putai Latadzen, and many other organizations back home, is that that root cause is because of our political status. Is because of the fact that we have never had the opportunity to determine what we want to have, what kind of relationship we want to have. And that ultimately, all of these problems of our language, of our culture, of our land being taken and our land being polluted and our ancestral remains being destroyed has to do with our colonization and the occupation of the land. And so with that, all of this is happening, all of this movement is happening of our people coming together to dialogue and to talk, to come to things like this and to have these conversations and talk story. And with that, right, you have all these different groups and all these different people working together to help perpetuate that, right? Help perpetuate the knowledge and help to decolonize our people in terms of their mind and their thinking. Right? And I think it kind of goes along with what Sean and Sean are doing, right, with Prebetsu out here in the Bay. Just like Independent Guahan out here in the Bay is trying to educate people who don't know about Chamorros and who don't know about the movement and the struggle back home. They're also doing their own work, right? Their own form of decolonization through their food. Like, it's a little bit different, right? Like, than what you would go home and kind of see. But the food, for me, like, I could always go to Prebetsu and know, like, I'm home. And I think that speaks a lot to what they're trying to do in terms of educating people, right, through the food. Because not everyone's going to listen to me about what I say, right? I could be a little extreme and radical for some. But you break bread, right, with some Chamorro food and talk story, it's their own form. And it's a whole other way, because at the end of the day, in order for our movement to push forward, in order for us to truly determine our future, we need folks at all levels, right? You need folks organizing and tabling, someone up here speaking to y'all, someone in the kitchen in the back cooking your food and bringing it out, and folks just to be educated and knowledgeable.
I have a question here. How do you battle the indigenous rights versus the sort of sense of equity for all people?
So I think that's one of the, like, misconceptions is, like, when you say, indigenous rights, Chamorros, right? It's like we're saying we're anti anything else. And that's not the case. It's really easy to say, you don't like these people, or you don't like these people, or you don't like these people. And it's not, right? I think when we look at decolonization, whether it's independence, right, it's not just like, it's only about Chamorros. No, there's so many people who call Guahan home. And that's like one of the things with Independent Guahan. Like, it's a part of our mission. It's for everyone and anyone who calls Guahan home. It's just for us, right? Like, that's our land. That's our ocean. That's our ancestors that are buried within that dirt, right? And so I think it's like one of those shifting of thinking. I think it can be very Western to think like, it's either this or that or us or them. And it's not, right? Like, Chamorros are very inclusive. But, you know, it's hard back home, right? Because there definitely is that sentiment back home with like, they're so anti this. But it's really not, right? At the end of the day, we want what's best for not only our people, but our land and our ocean and our culture and everything that comes with that. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
I guess my question is, like, what can we as, like, supporters, allies, white people do to support the independent Guajan movement, like, from the Bay Area,
yeah,
or, like, in our own, like, you know, what's the best way for, in your mind, as, like, someone who's an activist or an organizer in this movement?
Yeah, it's a great question. So actually, we have some members from Independent Guajan here. Independent Guajan actually started back in 2016 back home in Guajan. And then just recently opened up a Bay Area chapter, actually within last year. So you can sign up for our listserv to get more information, events, as well as just a little bit more about what I talked about, a little bit more in depth. You could learn, right? Like what you hear when you hear someone talk about Guam or refer to Guam as only a military base, you can be like, nah, actually, this is what I was told, right? And this is what I know. As well as just like find us on Instagram, find us on Facebook. We have both and kind of keep up to date. And now that we have a Bay Area chapter here, we're definitely going to start doing some more events. So yeah, sign up for the listserv. And I think just overall, like educating yourself, yeah? And then being able to spread that knowledge. Yeah, Sanamasi.
What are some of the highlights of the current cultural renaissance that has been mentioned a couple times? And I guess what is your ultimate dream for the continuation of that renaissance?
Some of the highlights of cultural renaissance, I would say, is a little bit what I talked about. Sagun Kuturan Tsumoru is a Chamorro cultural center that was started in the mid-2000s. It was over by the old GMH housing. It's the doctor's houses. It is 8 houses that each perpetuate a different cultural practice, from navigation to canoe building to body ornamentation to Dzogchen, which is our healers. You have Nihi, who's been doing a lot of different things. You have so many different artists who are doing their own clothing, such as Joey Certeza, who does Tao Pacific Designs. You have people who are doing language through Harau. You have all these different artists. There was just this event, Magahaga Rising, recently that took place back home, I want to say January, December time. And it was like a collective of all these women artists back home showcasing and selling their pieces, and it's just this whole push, right? Like starting to see, and you know, even our governor speaks full Chamorro, right? She understands it and speaks it. Even our lieutenant governor, and so there's so many different ways, even within schools, seeing how things are, like from poetry slams to music that's coming out, and then even just everyday wear, right? Like, you see people wearing the traditional jewelry of like a spondylus or sisinahi, and just being very proud of who they are and where they come from. And my ultimate dream would be truly independence for Guajan, for us to be able to really decide what our political status is, coming from, you know, my mother's family being where there is now a Navy base. There used to be an ancient village called Sumai, and that was where my grandma was born. And you can't go there unless you have a military ID card, right? But that's where my family's land is. And as of right now, I can't go there. I can't access that. And there's many Chamorros who have lost their land. So ultimately, for us to be able to decide what it is, to have, like, this may sound all, like, dreamy or whatever, but, like, truly, it's to be independent, for us to be able to control and perpetuate, right, our culture, our language, and do ultimately what's best for us and our people and our island and all of those who call Guajan home, yeah? And to have it for future generations, essentially, so that it can continue on, not only to myself, not to my children when I have them, or my grandchildren and my great-grands, but forever, forever and ever, amen. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Carrie Ann.
You've been listening to San Francisco State University Professor of Race and Resistance Studies, Carrie Ann Borja, on Guam's tumultuous and complex history. On Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Let's return to the program with Chef Sean Napudi and business partner Sean Camacho of Prubechu, San Francisco's premier Guamanian pop-up restaurant. They're joined in conversation by Angela Carrier.
It's that time. We're going to bring the chefs up for a short conversation. I'm going to introduce our moderator. Angela Carrier is a mother and the granddaughter of Remedios Guerrero of Familion Disu from Dedidu, Guahan. She has been part of the nonprofit arts community for the last 15 years, building cross-sector relationships in the Bay Area, and is currently the director of civic and community engagement at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Actively involved with the Bay Area Pacific Islander community, she represented Guam on the Community Task Force for the Pacific Worlds Exhibition at OMCA, was a member of the Chamorro Activist Group. Oh, man, I'm going to try and pronounce this.
Catch me later.
Famuk Saizan. Okay. Supports a decolonized and independent Guahan and founded the Pulon Collective. She received her BA in communication from the University of California, San Diego, with a minor in Spanish literature from Universidad de Barcelona. Angela Carrier.
Half a day, everyone. I get to meet with these amazing chefs.
Half a day, half a day.
Here they are. Thanks for coming out.
You're welcome.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for taking the time on Sunday.
No. I also want to just thank the JCCSF. I mean, to welcome us here like this, I feel like...
Thank you, JCC.
Let's give it up to the whole staff, the guys that come. Thank you for having us.
Amazing.
Thanks for allowing us to share our story about Guam and all of this. Appreciate everything, you guys.
Yeah, there's something about an institution that invests in stories, our stories from our perspective, that really just shows an investment in our kind of collective liberation and equity for all. So I guess we'll start with the menu tonight. Do you guys want to tell us about some of the appetizers, get into the Kelaguin that you featured?
Yeah, so we took the approach to this menu as something very simple, straightforward, but meaningful at the same time.
Like what our grandmas and our aunties would have ate in a situation like this.
Or what we would eat.
What we would eat, our whole family. This is a very typical dinner that you would get in any sort of gathering. Yeah. And specifically, Kelaguin is a cultural icon. You meet anybody that knows somebody from Guam. Oh, you know how to make Kelaguin?
Or, you're just doing anything, and they're like, where's the Kelaguin? Like, we're not doing Kelaguin today.
What other kind of Kelaguins are there?
Every protein under the sun.
Under the sun, yeah. You could do beef Kelaguin, deer Kelaguin, not to mention spam Kelaguin.
We're not going to get into that.
I think it's only... There's even spam Kelaguin competitions in Guam. So if you guys are very spam enthusiasts...
But we ceviche everything. We do deer, we do beef, we do fish, everything.
Yeah. You know. And that process of adding the lemon and the coconut. I mean, do you guys do the kanzu? Do you guys know how, like, where are those coconut halves on your table? If someone had...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we do. Well, we can find... proper, like a good coconut, mm-hmm. We definitely come to the coconut ourselves, nice. For sure.
Yeah,
it's important.
And so this fish on the table, which is delicious, I was sad to leave my table where it was it was still there. Tell us about that. Why did you serve us the fish in its entirety that way?
So fish, it kind of represents, I don't know if you will, like ancestrals, like before the deer, before the pig, before the chicken. There was the ocean, and in the ocean there was fish. So we took that approach as...
Yeah, it's one of the native...
Ancestrals, if you will, before we got colonized and whatever you want to call it. But yeah, we just took that approach of what's, off the land, if you will. Mm-hmm. So before the Spaniards, like I mentioned, before the pig and chicken, there's the seafood and the ocean, so...
Something that I, for those of you who had the honor and experience Prubechu in the mission, I always noticed you guys had the fish skeletons starting to dangle from behind. So tell me that story. I was always curious why you guys did that.
So in the typical cuisine in San Francisco, people are kind of like afraid of the head and the eyes and the tail.
They don't like food that looks
so
back at them.
When we get a big, what we did was we just had some of our friends like fly in fresh fish from Guam, and they'll be like so big, and we couldn't serve a whole big fish, so we'll have to fillet it. And we're just all about using everything. You know, if you're going to kill it, then you should.
I mean, those were decorative items in the restaurant, but chef definitely used them for stocks and other edibles. But those ones particularly, they're a fish called tataga, which is this unicorn fish that we get. Those fish came direct from Guam by family members that froze it right off the boat. We were super blessed in the beginning that everyone was so willing to bring stuff for us. There's a lot of ingredients that we had at the restaurant.
And then it got expensive.
Then it got really expensive.
And it wasn't as sustainable.
Yeah,
as
so in the beginning it was really nice to have, but long term it couldn't, it wasn't sustainable practice. But again, it was so cool to have ingredients from Guam that you can't, nobody eats unicorn fish out here. We call it tataga. Nobody eats tataga out here because you can't find it.
But if you fillet it, they don't know what it is until they eat it.
I love that story because I wondered about the skeleton. You guys also had the venado skulls as well. And there's something about our ancestors believed in the spirits of our in the bones of the body and the skulls, and their stories of how they would put them up when they were fighting the Spaniards as a way to bring in the power. So I just wondered if you were carrying some of that energy and spirit through that.
Yeah, it's a little, little voodoo-ish thing. But,
it's just our culture.
All the art that was on the walls in Prebechu, when we had Prebechu, all came from Guam. And those deer horns in particular came from Chef's property and, hunted by his family. So, everything had sentimental meaning that was on the wall in some way or another. Mm-hmm. They were all gifts. Like, we didn't buy anything. Right. When we started Prebechu, it was bare walls. And
bare bowls,
it was just
bare bones.
Food service, and that's it. Yeah. And then slowly, through gifts from everybody that means the world to us, we decorated Prebechu, and it became our home and a hub of many Chamorros around the bay. And also, we have a lot of friends that we met through the restaurant that are not from Guam or not Chamorro. So that was a cool dichotomy that we were able to achieve at the restaurant.
What else? What other ingredients do you continue to source from Guam? Like, what about the doni here in the Finadeni?
Achote seed. Yeah. What else? The lemon powder.
Some specialty seafood as well. Like, he'll get some top shell called a liling that he'll get from Guam. Or when his mom and dad come, they deck us out.
They'll bring the fresh. We call it mangu, but it's the turmeric, the orange ginger.
And for us, it's not just a novelty that we have ingredients from Guam. It's not something we're doing superficially. It means something to us. It tastes a certain way. It's very important to what we were doing at Prebechu. And it's not just this thing, it's from Guam for no reason. It's from Guam for a very specific reason. And it's about flavor, and it's about culture, and it's about sharing stories.
And the gulai hagonsuni was one of my favorite dishes, continues to be, that you guys would serve at the restaurant, and tonight equally is delicious. I mean, tell us how you've used that dish to really elevate your interpretation of Chamorro food.
Again, we just kind of went with ancestral, and then after that, we went to what would our grandmas eat, or what, so.
But I'll kind of pat him on the back. In this way, that gulai hagonsuni is usually eaten how you guys have it tonight. And it's a very humble-looking dish. It's never fancy. It's never done up in any way, ever, 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 except at Prebechu. So this guy has been the forefront of all the cutting edges of Chamorro food. And I don't mean that in a narcissistic way at all. But, that dish in Prebechu took on a different form, but tasted like that, which is super important, what we're trying to do. Keeping the soul and integrity of all the dishes was super important.
So my grandma was like, why are you putting the caramelized soy sauce in the gulai? I'm just like, don't ask me that question. But for our palates and our demographic, we just kind of need to have that layers of flavor and not make it like a one note. We just want to bring nuances and new ingredients. And since we live in Northern California, it's just the produce, and we're just so blessed. And we live in the best state that grows the best produce in the world.
We're lucky.
In the world. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, we're from Guam, and we found fresh, amazing turmeric at Byright Supermarket. Mm-hmm. Like,
$20 a pound.
But still, it tasted
amazing.
Yeah,
even just working with it, like, you can tell, you can just feel it. You know, and that's the cool thing with working with food. You get to see the differences in ingredients and how they're sourced and how they're cared for on all levels of the supply chain. The farmer to the, mm-hmm. the guy that sold it to us, let us taste everything on the produce rack. You know, and it's just that love and that connection with people that are working the land and people that are making the food and or making anything really. And ingredients and California, thank you very much.
Well, but you guys also embody a kind of spirit also that I think people would want to give back to and give back. So
yeah.
So here we are sharing this meal together, and I feel like food is one of those things, as was mentioned before, that can really be a conduit for education and communication and appreciation for our own Chamorro culture, but also for the greater community that we navigate in and around. And as we're finding Chamorro food, it can be this catalyst for difficult and complicated conversations, especially about the current U.S. occupation and the militarization of our island. So how can we decolonize our minds through what we put in our body? And what do you see as Perpetu's role in this movement, feeding a movement, both literally and figuratively?
That's a massive question. But we were prepped and we did think about this a little bit. And I think what it comes down to is like a cultural memory that you can't forget, right? Like, it's hugely important. Not to say like we're never going to eat Spam, but also Golai Hagensuni is a dish you can make with everything that was made on that was grown on Guam.
I think first it starts off as us growing up and thinking pansit was a Chamorro food, or is right? Because we see it every day on the fiesta tables. But then as we learn, it's just like, you know, people, the Philippines embraced it more than we've ever seen it.
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, no. Pansit is Filipino?
Yeah, you know? We grew up thinking that was a Chamorro dish.
Yeah.
Lumpia, I thought was from Guam. Like, forever, I thought it was a Guam dish. And then we figured that out. But, you know, turning back to your question about decolonization, like, it's, like, I don't claim to be any sort of expert on that, but again, like, remembering what our grandparents had to do to eat versus going to McDonald's. Like, I think that's the big line right there.
Yeah.
You don't have to give up McDonald's, but you also can remember you can go catch tataga. If you don't have money, you can go catch that. Or you can grow suni. Or you can, you know, create from the land. You can make things from the land. And that memory, I think, will help decolonize your mind a little bit. But again, like, I mean, you know, it's a catch-22 for us. We're colonized by the States, yet we're here doing business.
But it's, I think we're, and also it's just that, I think we're just raised in a different generation. I think our generation, which is all about speaking good English,
yeah,
going to college.
Right.
So that's, and then now learning like, man, your generation didn't really pick up that culture and the language.
Yeah, and it's been said already a few times, the cultural renaissance on Guam is real.
Yeah.
It's happening.
It's amazing.
You're part of it.
It's, well, thank you.
Yeah, but
to look back, like I tell people all the time, like, in my role at the restaurant was always front of the house, so people are always asking, say something in Chamorro. I'm like, here, I'm going to explain to you why I don't speak Chamorro, which is cool because it tells the story of why our parents didn't want to teach us, and it's a very important conversation to have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, you know, remembering what we could do without the colonizers.
But now you go back home and you see these middle school or elementary, you know, students just embracing the language and
making art,
yeah,
weaving,
just that Inafimalic kind of thing, you know.
It's crazy.
That sense
didn't exist when we were kids.
We are Chamorro. Like, that didn't exist. It's like,
when we were kids, we wanted to be American.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, back
MTV,
to your question. We were the MTV, you know, generation, like, through and through. But again, this cultural memory is coming back. There's a lot of kids that can, you know, they can say the rosary in Chamorro, which is amazing.
Yeah.
There's people that are, you know, they can cook better Chamorro than a lot of us before I learned from him.
So I think that's what is like driving this boat that we have is,
yeah,
you know, like, let's do better. Like, yeah, we could do better. Just in anything else we do in life, you know, just
be better.
Be better. Yeah. Enough of Maulik.
Yes. So Chamorros, you know, we come from small islands, but we have this enormous amount of strength and resilience and pride. And with the pride, Chamorro pride in particular, comes a particular kind of critique and criticism or comparison. So how do you respond to the idea of, you know, authentic or real Chamorro food? And how have you had to balance kind of this respetu for our manamku or respect for our elders with your vision and you know, for innovation and reimagining really what a Chamorro culinary experience can be?
I think to start there, like, I hate using the word, or I don't, that's bad. I don't like the word real or authentic, you know? I think if you're Chamorro and you're cooking Chamorro food, I think that already is authentic. Like, even if no judgment on your taste or whatnot. As long as if you're from Guam, you can put a finger on it, you're doing the Chamorro way, you know?
And to say it's authentic food from Guam, it's changed so much. Mm-hmm. Every generation has had a different influence. And to us, lumpia and pancit was authentic. You know what I mean? And
then now, until we came out here.
We look back and we're like, what?
We thought sushi or the kimbap.
The kimbap.
That they sold at the corner store that we ate every morning were from Guam. But then we came out here. We're like, that's sushi? No, that's kimbap, sir. Yeah. Kimbap? No way, that's from Guam.
Yeah, so that word authentic is a little elastic. You can use it in a lot of ways and it's always changing. And so this is the new authentic, you know? Yeah. Like, this is the authentic. Like, you're going to eat something that doesn't look like what your grandma made, but it tastes the same, you know? And that authentic, that's authentic, the authenticity.
Right?
That's inside, though. Yeah. You know, staying true to the flavors and not doing too much. Like, we're never going to make, like, a Golai Hagansuni ramen. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But everything that he does always has the flavor and the dish in mind before he takes creative license. I don't want to speak for you, but...
No, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't make Golai ramen. Oh, that's a good idea, man.
We might. It will be good if we do.
So a shared meal can really, and this communal experience we're having, are really powerful tools towards leading towards our collective liberation. And, you know, as we know, the origins of many of these quintessential ingredients that we're using to define Chamorro cuisine are tied to brutal occupation of our island by Spain, Japan, the United States.
Germany.
But these flavors combine to make, you know, undeniably...
Make it Chamorro.
Delicious dishes. But, you know, how can we use a meal like tonight to uncover and explore and ultimately heal from intergenerational trauma?
Another really, really intense question. But I mean, it's an important one,
You
know? And I think food's one of those things where if you eat it, it snaps you back to wherever you were, and those memories will come up. And we tell the story all the time of a manamku and one of the elders that came to the restaurant really early on.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And he had a little sip of tuba, which is a fermented coconut nectar, which is basically the only liquor that we would call native to Guam, but we learned it from the Filipinos. Again, authentic, right?
Authentic, right?
So he had a little sip of this tuba, which came from Guam,
mm-hmm.
and he started to cry right at the table. Right, and,
like, literally,
and that brought back tears of his.
So we thought it was bad,
We thought it was on. Our tuba's not good enough for him.
Go out there and check. Why is he crying?
Yeah, and in fact, so Chef went out to the table because we were like, "Why?
Yeah, what's going on?"
And this was when Perpetua had nothing on the walls. We had a lot of Chamorros that made us look busier than we should have been in the beginning. Because, like, I mean, like, when Chamorros hear there's a new restaurant, they're coming.
Yeah,
thank you all who did that for us. We appreciate it. Made us look good. But back to the guy, he started crying, and food, again, is one of those things that snaps you back. And he started crying from the memory of a concentration camp in Menengan where he last saw his brother and his family. He hadn't been back to Guam since the 50s, right? And so that's one of those healing moments that I can kind of, like, I get goosebumps when
it was almost nostalgic for him.
Yeah.
But in a bad way, I guess.
But, yeah. But again, like, that could be part of his healing. I don't know, but... That those are the I don't know how we can definitely uncover it by talking about how we got a choti, how we got, you know, chili peppers, or how we got any of these colonial influences. Those are the uncovering parts. The healing parts, I think, is
that's a tough one.
Nostalgia, you know.
You know, like, talking to someone that went through the concentration camps.
Yeah.
seen
that was super
the massacres and, you know, felt that pain and then just left the island and then just doesn't even want to deal with the island.
Yeah. And we get that all the time. People will eat stuff and they say, oh, this reminds me of my Auntie Mary, or this reminds me of my Uncle Joe. He used to make this. So those connections with food will never go away, and it's ingrained in us. And, you know, I mean, how to heal from it is tough. But
I think you give us some humor. That's part of it, right? Laughing about this as well and finding the joy.
Part of our culture.
Yep.
You know, laugh, talk story, tease each other a little bit.
Yes.
A lot of teasing.
A lot of teasing.
It's a very big part of our culture.
You've been listening to Chef Sean Napudi and business partner Sean Camacho of Prubechu, San Francisco's premier Guamanian pop-up restaurant. They're joined in conversation by Angela Carrier on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So as was mentioned earlier, last November, our first female governor was elected.
Yeah, Biba.
Yeah, a historic milestone.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
And a majority female legislation.
Legislation,
as well. So, you know, knowing this and our matrilineal society and legacy, tell us about some matriarchs in your family who've influenced you and your food, and then how do you continue to honor and lift up our matrilineal legacy?
Right here. That last course is everything, you know? Like he said, what would our grandmas or our aunties eat?
And that's who it is. Our matriarch is grandma. She's boss. Grandma's boss, you know?
Boss.
She organizes everything, and she, you know, she's the one, and it's always been that way. And how we pay respect is, you know, by honoring our wives and our mothers and little baby Paloma, and, you know, like.
And just showing respect.
Yeah,
that's
respect is where it is, you know? That's how we show honor to our... That's a huge part of our culture, too, you know?
Yeah.
Mothers.
Enough of Malik.
So, as you know, we've mentioned a lot tonight, but we're really in this generation, I would call it, like, of inventiveness and this beautiful wave of Chamorro brilliance is the term I like to use that Sam gave me, both on island and here, and we're adapting and evolving our Chamorro culture. And our traditions and values. And I see both of you and Prubechu really as a statement to the community and to young people of what is possible and the representation of Chamorro people and visibility for us matters. So as Chamorros living in the Bay Area, what do we need to kind of nurture and prioritize that culture of interdependence or enafa maulik, as you would talk about?
Oh, there it is again.
Yeah. I think it's the golden rule in life, you know?
Just
treat others how you would want to be treated.
That's it. I mean, like we said it again, be good, be better, you know? I mean, and enafa maulik is one of those...
It's the golden rule.
It's hard to explain that sentiment, but it's about everyone taking care of each other with everything they got. You go to the beach and you catch 50 pounds of fish, you're not going to waste any of it. You're going to share with the entire community. You know, if you see someone passing by your house in a fiesta, you're not going to just let them go. You're going to say, come here and eat, boy. You know, it's a big part of that, I think. I mean, I don't know what we can do.
And to point out what the JCC did in that sense of enafa maulik is the scale. Like, that's amazing, you know? Some people can't afford a $100 dinner.
Oh, yeah, the sliding scale.
The sliding scale, you know? So that already just kind of really...
It's a culture of inclusiveness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's... I forgot the question already, but...
Just trying to embrace the well-being the enafa maulik, you know?
And what we can do for you and what you do for us and, like, how you're supporting the movement in different ways and how you're representing something. You're giving hope to young
one
folks.
One cog in this huge wave that's happening. And you guys as well. You guys are doing great work. And, like,
ladies,
props to you guys. You guys are killing it. These girls went to the UN and testified on our behalf. For places like
women,
you know,
it was the majority.
Yeah, majority. Yeah, I mean, and they went and did it with no benefit except for our culture, which is amazing. So thank you guys for that. I mean, Three Chiefs Brew. But again, like, there's a lot of young folks, and I use that young part loosely. that are doing a lot of great things, you know, with not just you guys, and, you know, we try to do our best as well, but even something like Three Chiefs Brewing, which is just part of this big craft beer wave, not, I shouldn't say just part of it, they are part of it, mm-hmm. but look at the beer you're drinking in front of you, it's called Guahan.
Yeah, so that beer is just made for Guahan.
Yeah.
And that's not supposed to be drank here.
And
to share
this kind of beer, right?
Yeah.
To share this kind of beer, what's Guahan? There's another story to tell. And there's a lot of people like us that are doing things like that that mean everything to them except mm-hmm. money. Like,
so that was Three Cheeses' promise. You know, we'll start a brewery. They're three guys from Guam, born and raised.
The Three Cheeses.
And their giving back was to make a special beer just for the island of Guam. So other beer heads would be like, how can I get that Guahan beer? You got to go to Guam. Or know someone from Guam.
Or so, have her get it up here for us.
Yeah. So that's, you know, with the Chamorro Brilliance, I think it's...
Yeah, and I love that term. It
doesn't matter.
It's so fitting because there's a lot of brilliance that are happening for no reason except mm-hmm. people want to do it. Like they feel a cultural sort of prerogative. You know, it means something to them again. When in our generation, sad to say, it didn't mean much to us. I'll speak for myself. It didn't mean much to me because I wanted to be an American kid, you know? And now there's so much pride in Guam. There's so much pride in being at home. Like, we always wanted to leave. Like, you graduate high school, you leave the island. Mm-hmm. And now people are like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here to give back.
Yeah.
Or they're coming out here, getting educated, going back and taking over the legislature, you know?
Yeah.
Tomorrow Brilliance. Word.
Well, I mean, I consider you guys part of that. So, I mean, what inspires and motivates you? Like, tell us. Share.
Just sharing stories and, you know, seeing where this world's taken us and how we have to stand for our beliefs and our, you know, our moral values. I think that's what drives us, and especially coming from a really, you know, rooted culture, and
yeah,
it just drives you. I just, you know, like, I don't know, just like do the right thing again. You know, it goes back to that thing around the Nafamalik. It's just, you know, doing the right thing.
I would say in the beginning, the main motivation was just to serve our food, because we always knew that this, everybody loves it. You cook Chamorro food for anybody in anybody's house, like, what the hell is this? And it's always well received, but nobody ever shared it with anybody. So in the beginning, it was just about getting our food out. Chamorro food, his, you know, training along the way. And then for me, at least, after we gained our reputation and our you know, our worth, more or less, it became about sharing stories with everybody. Sitting here with you, mm-hmm. talking to people at the restaurant, telling stories about mom, dad, grandma, or, you know, even like reconnecting with people from Guam. That they come to us because they feel at home. That's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And just and also just us, like, hosting, you know, film,
yeah,
different artists.
Exactly. Those are all major points of inspiration for us. Like, artists and like the boys mm-hmm. that play, they play for us all the time, and they never want money, and it's all love, and that's like, that's our culture right there. You know, so thank you guys.
Yeah, and Provecho really was, you know, in its first home in the mission, really was this cultural hub and a gathering place. I mean, you guys, as you said, you had music all the time, you had film, the whole pig dinners, mm-hmm. you know, it was the Chamorro art and the language and the menu, or hearing the language spoken at the table next to you. And, you know, the forced closure is just sadly another example of displacement in this city. So, you know, what in this transition, in this moment for you guys, what's next for Provecho?
I was just mentioning,
what's
like,
your dream?
But one door, you know, closes, many more open. So I think we're just being optimistic on finding a space. But as for now, like,
we're just going to keep sharing
our food. Riding this wave and sharing story, you know, and...
Yeah, so we're around. If you guys want to do or follow us on Instagram, all that stuff. If you're not already, jump on our mailing list. We're inviting all our regulars first before we hit social.
Do you want to mention our launch with Nomiku?
Oh, yeah. So Nomiku is this...
local.
It's a local startup. They're doing like home circulators or sous vide machines. And we recently, as of last week, started packaging Chamorro food to be cooked at home in your sous vide machine. Yeah. So yeah. If you got him sous vide machine,
so
or
if you like that Golai Hagen Suni, you can find it at Nomiku next Wednesday.
So I mean, and they have a massive marketing machine. So this is like another outlet for us to say Chamorro to more people. Yeah. You know, to say that word to people is like a huge you know, benefit for us. So yeah, we got that launching too. Yeah, but we're staying busy. We're trying to at least, you know, and you know we're not done.
Oh, sainamase, you guys both so much.
Hagumas.
Yes.
Dusmasi. Iba.
So looks like we have time for some more questions. So one in the back.
We have a question from Sean's auntie.
Chef, Auntie Care.
It's true.
Sanmasi again for all that y'all do. And being here, creating this food for all of us to be here. And I just wanted to know two questions. Question number one, what is your favorite Chamorro dish? And question number two, best place for empanada back home?
So the question is, favorite Chamorro dish, number one. Number two, best empanada, place to get empanada back home.
Man.
The old chordis.
The old chordis.
The old chordis was key. The new one can...
Sorry. If anybody's relatives are...
That's a tough subject.
This can get really ugly. This can
the
get...
The old chordis was bad. Favorite Chamorro dish, my grandma's bistec. Specifically my grandma's, because I can't hold a candle to it. But that's my favorite.
I think mine would be Kudumpika. It's a super spicy...
His dad's Kudumpika.
stew, if you will. But they make it with stewing chicken. So it's... They cut the stewing chicken, you know, kind of small. So it's all about the gnaw. Like if you like to gnaw on bones and stuff like that, and the gristle.
It's a fun dish.
That's my favorite dish.
And did you already answer the empanada question?
Yeah, that's a scary one to answer.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Just a quick question. Do you think that there is a sustainable export market from Guam? And what would those products be in your mind?
Sustainable market.
I don't know. That's the golden question, right? Like, we need to start making things for ourselves. Hopefully, I mean, in the old days it was copra, it was dried coconut meat, but I don't know how much of a demand there is for that anymore. But I mean, I don't know.
It's tough. Guam's so small. Yeah. You know?
Do we need to export?
That would be my question.
I think we need to be self-sustained, but like again, Guam is only 30 miles long and 15 miles wide, so.
I guess if the question is whether or not to get rid of tourism as a main economic driver, then I think that. The one thing is not there yet, and who knows what that's going to be. Tourism right now has like got a lock, you know, until people start manufacturing anything. I mean, Saipan manufactured stuff for a long time, but they exported it out to Gap and, you know, all these companies. Like, doing something that means something to the people, I think, will have a bigger impact. But I don't know, and I hope it happens, though.
Being optimistic about it.
Good question.
Thank you again for this amazing meal.
Thank you.
You mentioned tourism, and I wanted to hear kind of what the impact tourism has on the Chamorro culture.
A massive, massive impact. Yeah. So the main tourist on Guam is Japanese, which is ironic because Japan has such a bad... There's a bad memory of Japan on Guam because of the occupation. And we tell this story all the time at the restaurant. During Japan's few years on Guam, you had to be Japanese. You had to speak Japanese. You had to practice Japanese culture. They raped. They killed. They did everything. All the atrocities that come with war and concentration camps and occupation happened to our grandmothers and our, you know, their mothers and fathers. And so, ironically, we rely on the Japanese to drive our economy now. I mean, it's widening.
It's widening now.
Yeah, there's a
They've
lot
been
more,
up to China,
there's a
Russia.
Lot of, yeah, for sure. Culturally, I think it does two things. I mean, it doesn't really hurt our culture much, but it helps.
I think it enhances.
It spreads the word of how cool Guam is. People come like, oh, they're so friendly. They give you food when you don't want it. And, you know, they force you to eat.
They force you to eat.
But yeah, it's had a huge, it has a bigger impact on our environment, you know, like it helps spread the culture in that way, but it also has like, we have like our Waikiki is called Tuman, and we only go there to, you know, hit the bars and, but back in our parents' day, Tuman was a lush coconut forest and now it's a concrete jungle where, you know, crime happens, which is it seems obvious, but in our villages crime never happened. Like we didn't lock our doors.
Door
we just, you know, like we would just trust everybody. Now with development and with industrialization comes all the trappings, which again, not just crime, but you know, kind of, you know, anyway, get it. I don't know where I'm going with that, but so I think the biggest impact is environmental. Catch 22, because we need them, you know.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Can we give it up for Angela, Sean, and Sean?
Thank you.
Thanks for asking those amazing questions.
A big thank you again to Bert Javier and Hank for sharing their music with us. Thank you.
All right, we're gonna play one more song for you guys, and it's going to require some crowd participation, so... All right, let's go. Everyone say half a day. One more time, half a day. Very good, very good.
Half a day, told him Malik, how are you? Half a day, told him Malik, thank you. Half a day, half a day. Half a, half a, half a, half a day. In the pretty islands of Marianas, you see in there the children say, as the local people wave and say, a simple greeting word called half a day.
Half a day!
With a happy smile on your face, you can venture in a friendly place, really meaning what they say. Sunday, simply say, half a, half a, half a, half a day. Half a day, total mind.
We're getting better.
How are you? Half a day, total Malik, thank you. Half a day, half a day. Half a, half a, half a, half a day.
One more time.
Half a day, total Malik, how are you? Half a day, total Malik, thank you. Half a day, half a day. Half a, half a, half a, half a day.
All right, give yourselves a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Half a day means hello, just like aloha.
Can we give it up for Hank and Burr, everyone?
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Our first guest at the beginning of the program was San Francisco State University Professor of Race and Resistance Studies, Carrie Ann Borja. And our guests for most of the hour were Chef Sean Napudi and business partner Sean Camacho of Prubechu, San Francisco's premier Chamorro and Guamanian pop-up restaurant. They were joined in conversation by Angela Carrier. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Alex Espelay, Dan Folds, Carly Mari, and Aiden Nelson. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pimentuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.